The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
New research suggests that the large altar stone at Stonehenge is in fact Scottish and not Welsh, thus indicating that the stone had to travel 700 kilometres to Wales from Scotland, or to southern England really, from Scotland, almost 5,000 years ago. To talk us through the findings, we've got the co-author of the study, Richard Bevans. Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Let's talk about Stonehenge itself. You know, we know of it and we know there's a replica that people can visit, although not necessarily the real thing. What was it all about?
Well, I'm a geologist, and it's for the archaeologists to put their interpretation on what Stonehenge was. My close colleague, Professor Mike Parker-Pearson, who's an archaeologist at UCL in London, would say that the stones were a testimony to the dead, and then the wooden structures like Woodhenge, adjacent to Stonehenge, Woodhenge was a testimony to the living. So it was that spiritual meaning. And that gives some understanding, perhaps, as to why the stones were moved as Neolithic people migrated. So in the case of Stonehenge, the blue stones, as the Neolithic communities in West Wales migrated to Essex, to where there was a Neolithic community, that they took their stones with them because they were testimony to their ancestors.
Okay, so are we suggesting that Stonehenge or something similar to it would have existed in Wales and then was moved lock, stock and barrel to Essex, and that in turn it might have existed prior to that in Scotland, and or part of it, and that Scottish bit was moved to Wales and then it moved in turn to Essex? Is that
so? So the interpretation would be that yes, there were stone circles created in the areas where those Neolithic communities were, and when they migrated they dismantled their stone circle and took the stones with them. It sounds quite extreme, but certainly such practices exist, or certainly the use of stone in ceremonial procedures exists today in countries like Madagascar, for example.
So 5,000 years ago, how big is this altar stone? I'm trying to figure out how they might have moved it.
Well, I think the most important thing is it weighs 6 tons, and that's a big slab of rock. So, yeah, certainly moving the stone is an interesting debate that no doubt will be, it is already a discussion of debate, but we'll come to the fore following this work. And you're left with a couple of overall ideas. Perhaps the stone was transported by ice during the last glaciation or even an earlier glaciation.
You mean it was slid along?
As ice moves, it entrains stone, and it can entrain huge pieces of stone and deposit them, and we call them glacial erratics. Now, there isn't any, from the modelling that's taken place by glaciologists, some recent work by a group called the BritIce group, in the part of the world that we think the stone comes from, the Orcadian Basin, there is no evidence of an ice flow from that area across Britain or across the North Sea region.
Okay, so there wouldn't be just one stone if that was the case. There would be lots of stones that were subject to this glaciation. So,
indeed, Pat, and that's one of the sort of the lack of evidence, if you like, for it being ice transport. But there are those people who believe very strongly in the ice transport mechanism, I respect their views. I'm looking at it from the point of view, where are the other erratics, as you say, Pat? Mm-hmm. And do we find what are called erratic trains? That's where the ice has deposited a series of erratics of a similar rock type or from a similar area.
So, I mean, the idea would be, in the case of glaciation being the mode of transport, that suddenly the Neolithics find this beautiful stone. Wow, this is great. Nothing like it around here. So let's make it our central altar stone. That is what the glaciation theory would suggest. The other theory, which is harder to kind of figure out, it was in Scotland. It was in a place of honour and respect and so on. And they said, we're moving. We better take this with us. How do they take it with them?
Well, that's a very, very good question. No, as I say, I'm a geologist, and we kind of do the analysis and identify a source region. And with great respect, then we turn to our archaeology colleagues and say, well, how does that fit in with your understanding of Neolithic society? And perhaps Neolithic society was more sophisticated and had greater technological capabilities than they've been given credit for. Certainly there is evidence of trading between Scotland, between Orkney and Stonehenge, and of course across to Ireland, to the Boyne, to the Newgrange and Nowth and Douth, and those trades there is evidence for, but of course those are on things that are much more portable, maybe axe heads or pottery ware, or to suddenly put a 6-ton stone into the mix. Well, that's interesting.
Well, you could presumably, if you were seagoing, as if they go to Ireland, they had to be seagoing, they might have been able to construct a rather large boat upon which to move this stone. And that's maybe the most likely way. I can't imagine them dragging it along with the help of beasts of burden, oxen or whatever, all the way down 700 kilometres. Doesn't make sense.
And of course, the land route has its difficulties. A sea route does, but if you think of the land route, you've got hills, mountains, valleys, rivers. So a potentially tortuous route. So maybe, yes, Pat, the sea route and shipping is more viable. And there is evidence of trading with continental Europe at that time. There's the introduction of what's called the Orkney vole. That's a vole that is only found on Orkney, and its ancestors, if you like, its lineage, is back in Northern Europe. So that would suggest marine trading as well. So, yeah, perhaps that is...
Wasn't there some original thinking that the stone may have come from Ireland?
Yes. So if we go back to AD 1136, Geoffrey of Monmouth, in his book, The History of the Kings of Britain, suggested that it was Merlin the Wizard had dismantled the stones. So this is steeped in Arthurian legend. That he dismantled the stones at Mount Kilaos. That's a mythical mountain. But the legend goes that that was the original site of Stonehenge. And then those stones were taken by Merlin the Wizard and taken across to Amesbury, the site of the current Stonehenge. So, that is...
That's easy to do if you're a wizard.
Well, I think I prefer that story than aliens, to be honest. But
all right. Now, the question of how it changes everything about Stonehenge, knowing that you have... It's located in Essex. It's got stone, local stone from... around Essex, one presumes. It's got stone from Wales, and now it's got stone from Scotland. Happy days.
You mean evening out the balance?
Yeah.
I think it's very... I have seen in the press in the last few days these stones being called English and Welsh and Scottish. I'd prefer to say the stone was sourced in Scotland, sourced in Wales, because obviously at that time of the sourcing, there was no countries identified in that way.
Now, how did the discovery come about that this was a stone that originated in Scotland? I mean, have archaeologists or geologists rather been, if you'll pardon the phrase, chipping away at this for years?
That's one thing we're not allowed to do at Stonehenge. We can't chip away. But in the sense you mean it, yes, I've been involved for 15 years. And this is, it's not the culmination, but it's certainly a milestone in the research. So 15 years ago, I was invited by one of the co-authors of the paper, a colleague of mine, Dr. Rob Ixer, to join with him in looking at a box of samples that he'd been sent by an archaeologist. They were from the collections in Salisbury Museum. There were 12 stones. They were collected in 1947 by an archaeologist called Stone. So they're stones. That's a bit quirky. So my colleague Rob sent me an email saying, Fame or Fortune is how he titled it. He said, because he knew my background in researching Welsh geology from Pembrokeshire area. So he said, would I work with him on this set of samples and see what we made of them? The context of a paper published in 1923, which said the bluestones, the smaller stones at Stonehenge, came from West Wales. Looked at them, and I was saying, well, these are right. These are spotted dolerites. That's a very particular rock type that occurs in the Preseli Hills in Pembrokeshire and makes up some of the bluestones. But there was one rock type in particular I couldn't match up. And I investigated it further and eventually tracked it down to an outcrop in Pembrokeshire, very close to where the original H.H. Thomas paper identified sources, but it was a different source. So we passed that information to our archaeological colleagues. They undertook excavations over a 3 or 4 year excavation period and came up with evidence of Neolithic activity and occupation in that very particular locality. And so that became, if you like, one of the sources of stone extraction. Right. So we pinned it down to a particular outcrop. And we followed that through, looking at different types of the bluestones. And then about 2018, we turned our attention to the altar stone. Now, the altar stone is very different from the other bluestones. And that even goes so far to say, calling it a bluestone, as H.H. Thomas did originally, has kind of hampered thinking, because he suggested his philosophy was he wanted all the bluestones to come from a very particular area in Pembrokeshire. He'd tracked down some of the sources, and he was working around the hypothesis that they all came from that same area.
But your work eventually led you to Scotland and this now perplexing discovery. Yeah. Over to the archaeologist, says you. But Richard, thank you very much for telling us this story. It's an extraordinary one. Richard Bevans, geologist from Aberystwyth University, co-author of the study.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.